Welcome to the Stuff Podcast. I'm Chad Young, joined as always by Pete Ball, and we are on to episode 99. I know we're not a hockey pod, but that's definitely the Wayne Gretzky episode. I think it has to be.
Definitely. It's certainly not the Aaron Judge episode, so yeah.
It could be the Judge episode. Still think Gretzky. Nah.
Let's go Gretzky.
Rick Wild Thing Vaughn from Major League. That might be better.
Yeah.
But we are, we're closing in. The century mark is upon us. As a reminder, we are a proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting sources. You can leave us ratings and reviews at all those sources, which would be great. We love to see those. You can also find us on Twitter at Keep or Cut. That's cut with a K. Find me at Chad Young. Find Pete at Pete B Baseball. Love to hear from you. Love to get questions. But today, we are recording this on Sunday, May 14th. It's Mother's Day. We're not doing anything for Mother's Day on the episode. I don't know what we would possibly do as a Mother's Day episode of Keep or Cut. Probably.
Well, happy Mother's Day to all those listener mothers out there.
Listener mothers. What I'd really have to do to make it a Mother's Day episode of Keep or Cut is not record it. And be with my wife and kids. But they'll wait for me. They'll be okay.
It's only 7:10 over there, right? You're probably doing them a favor by not waking them up.
You know what I did? You know what I did? I made a big pot of coffee and left it. So when my wife gets up, there will be coffee ready for her.
Well played.
My daughter was super excited about Mother's Day. I don't really know. Like, this isn't like a thing like every year. This is like Christmas to her, even though she's not getting any gifts. And so she was like in our room at like 6:15 being like, should I get my card for mom yet? Where's my gift? Is my gift ready? And I was like, we're just still asleep here. Let's just slow down. But yeah. Anyways.
She's just excited. That's all.
Yeah, just excited. It's her birthday this week, and she had her birthday party yesterday. So I think like everything is just sort of running together for
celebrations.
Yeah. A lot going on. May is a big month. Both my kids are May birthdays. So we have a lot going on in the last half of the month here. But let's get back to baseball. What we want to talk about today are guys that we're not ready to give up on. And, you know, we're now 6 weeks into the season. And so you're starting to go to a point where, like, we talked about Jose Abreu. We talked about some struggling players last week. We talked about Jose Abreu last week. Like, oh, he's struggling and, like, I'm kind of out on him. But we're reaching a point where, like, whether it's Abreu or someone else, you actually have to start to make some of those decisions of, like, is this a guy who I'm just going to sell low? Is this a guy who I'm so out on I'm going to cut? Is this a guy who, like, I'm out, but they're on my roster, and so I'm just going to live with it? Like, or are you still sort of buying in? Are the guys you want to buy low? And one of the things I was thinking about, and we talked about this earlier in the week, but it's easy to go look at a hitter's WOBA, a pitcher's ERA, and tell who's performing poorly. But it's also very easy these days, and most fantasy players are looking at things like ex-WOBA and FIP. And so it's not real easy to be like, oh, I'm going to buy low on, let's get a good example here. I'm going to buy low Alex Bregman, 297 WOBA, guy's not hitting it all. Like, any savvy fantasy manager can see that he's got a 350 X WOBA, that things are probably better than they seem for Alex Bregman. And so we wanted to go look at this and take it a step further and say, all right, who are the guys who, if you went to that next step, you went to look at, you saw their ERA was bad, you saw their WOBA was bad, you took a next step and looked at their ex-WOBA or their FIP, those are still bad. And maybe we're still in on them, right? And so just trying to go a level deeper. And I think we'll start with the offensive side. And what I've got here to start with, and these won't be the only guys we'll talk about, but I have a list of the 19 qualified hitters, so hitters who've had enough plate appearances to matter, who have a WOBA and an ex-WOBA, both under 300. So these are guys who are they're not hitting well. There's no sort of like, oh, they're, you know, bad luck, blah, blah, blah. Like, they're just not hitting well. And we will talk about some guys who are like close to that 300 level or a little bit above it. But here's the list of 19 hitters that are below 300 on both. And Pete, get ready to think about who on here you're interested in or what reactions you have to them. So, and I'm going to sort these by ex-WOBA. So Enrique Hernandez, CJ Abrams, Nick Maton, Elvis Andrus, Robbie Grossman, Andreas Jimenez, Jamer Candelario, Andrew Benintendi, Gio Urshela, Jose Abreu, Manny Machado, Ezekiel Tovar, Joey Weimer, Tony Kemp, Miles Straw, Jose Miranda, Gene Segura, Josh Rojas, and Nolan Arenado. So I think to start, the maybe the obvious place to start is there are two legitimate stud third basemen on here, right? In Manny Machado and Nolan Arenado. And again, this isn't just like, oh, they've had some bad luck, things aren't breaking their rule. Like, these guys have kind of sucked so far. And they are two early picks that people were really counting on at a weak position. So yeah. What are your thoughts on Machado and or Arenado?
So let's start with Arenado, just so that we can make it about me, because don't you wish you built your TGFBI team around Nolan Arenado and Joe Musgrove and Jose Altuve and Raisel Iglesias, and then spent a third of your fab on Taj Bradley. Don't you wish that was you?
Oh, man, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, no, it's not going great. I want to start with Arenado, though, because, well, first of all, he's looked great this series against the Red Sox. I think he's already beginning to bounce back. He hit, I believe, a home run in both games in the series so far. He's starting to pull the ball more, which, like, throughout Arenado's career, pulling the ball has kind of been his bread and butter, especially the last 2 years as he's changed as a hitter, right? Ever since he's come to St. Louis, we've seen a shift in his approach where he's really been a lot more fly ball heavy the last two seasons than he had been during his career in Colorado. And he's been a lot more pull heavy the last two seasons, 45.2% pull rate in 2022, 45.8% pull rate in 2021. Before that, he hadn't been even over 40% pull rate. You'd have to go all the way back to 2016 to see him pulling the ball that much. So he had shifted as a hitter. And I think he realized he had to generate more power outside of Coors. But he's kind of gone back to like his Coors approach this season, intentionally or not, where he's pulling the ball less than 40%. The fly ball rate is back down to 25%, whereas the last 2 years it's been, it was 32.7 in 2021 and 29% in 2022. So those are, you know, when you're not lifting the ball and you're not pulling it, you better have some serious exit velocities and you know, get a little bit of BABIP luck as well, which Arenado doesn't have, right? He's not particularly quick. He had obviously really high BABIPs in Colorado. I don't expect him to generate high BABIPs outside of Colorado. And on top of that, he's somebody who does not usually hit for high exit velocities. That just hasn't really been his game. Even last year when he was, what, third in MVP voting, he was 46th percentile average exit velocity. So like, he's a guy who needs to pull the ball and lift the ball to get that power going. And in his defense, St. Louis has also been terrible as a team offensively outside of Goldschmidt. So like, I think St. Louis is going to start bouncing back. And I think Arenado has already started to bounce back, and I'm still in on him.
Yeah. I think with Arenado, there are two things I'm a little bit still concerned about, and they're, one of them is fixable. One of them is just a note. And so the note is, you know, I was on Hacks and Jacks last week with Scott Chu. And as always, if you ever talk to Scott Chu, if you ever listen to Scott Chu, if you follow him on Twitter, he's always talking about rolling charts, right? It's his favorite tool. And one of the things I noticed looking at Arenado, and this is a contrast to Machado, is that if you look at Arenado's rolling WOBA chart, this isn't just like, oh, he goes through periods like this every once in a while, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is a low dip for him, well below what we've seen elsewhere in his career. There's a couple of times he's gotten sort of that low, maybe, but this is not normal for him. It's an actual sort of new low point for him. So that's just sort of the note. It's not something you can do anything about. It's just thing worth noting. This isn't normal fluctuation for him. The other thing, which I do think is something you can do about, is if you look at his plate discipline, his biggest issue right now is he's chasing more than normal. He, you know, his career chase rate is 35.6%. It's been around there most of the last, you know, decade. He's at 40.1% this year. It's the first time he's been over 40%. It's actually the first time he's over 38.5% since his rookie season in 2013. He's also making contact on pitches outside the zone at 66.7%, which would be almost a career low. He was at 66.2%. back in 2018. Now, his contact and pitches inside the zone is fine. His swing rate at pitches inside the zone is fine. And so I think what's happening here a little bit is, and maybe this is related to the poor start, right? He has a poor start, and so he starts pressing a little bit, and he starts swinging at pitches he shouldn't. But he's clearly swinging at some pitches he shouldn't be swinging at, and it's causing his contact rate to dip, and his overall contact rate has dipped below 80%, which it hasn't done in about five seasons. And he's at 81.1 for the year. He's down at 79% this year, but it's all concentrated in this issue in pitches outside the zone. So if I'm Arenado's hitting coach, what I'm saying to him is like, let's refocus on your patience. Let's refocus on like, you know, punish the pitches you can punish and stop swinging at stuff you shouldn't. Now that's obviously easier said than done. There's a reason I'm not a hitting coach, right? It's like, yeah, I'm aware he should do this. I have no idea how to make him do it, but that's the adjustment I think he needs to make. I haven't seen that adjustment yet. His O swing is still sort of trending up, which is not ideal, but I think he'll make that adjustment. He's too good a hitter and has been for too long for us to sit here and be like, yeah, you know, he's broken, he's done. I do think the thing I would note along with my comment before about this dip being sort of a new low point for him, it's not just sort of an outlier. The only times he's really been close to dips like that are in 2020 and 2021. And those were his bad years, for lack of a better term, right? I mean, this is a guy who ran WOBAs, again, other than his rookie year, he's run WOBAs above 350 every year for his career through 2019. And then in 2020 and 2021, and above 350, by the way, is an understatement. He was 359 one of those years and above 370 all the others, mostly above like 380, 390. So 2020, he runs a 308. 2021, he runs a 336. 2021 is that first sort of full season, right? 2020, COVID year, whatever. But 2021, first full season outside of Coors, runs a 336. And I think for a lot of people, myself included, there's a sense of like, maybe this is just who he's going to be moving forward, is sort of a 330 to 340 kind of guy instead of 390. And then he had a 381 last year and just absolutely tore up the league again. It was like, oh, I guess he's fine. I sort of think what we're seeing right now is a good reminder that if you look back at his last sort of 4 years as a group, 4 years including this year, that sort of 340-ish range is probably actually more accurate than the 381 he put up last year. And so as I'm looking forward at this season, I'm still in on Arenado. I would still sort of buy low, but I don't think you're looking at, like, last year he had a 358 OBP. He had a 293 average. He had 30 home runs. Like, I don't think, and it's not just that he's had a bad start, and so how could he possibly hit those numbers? But like, I don't think he's going to put up those numbers for the rest of the year. Like, I don't think that's his like rest of season projection is to repeat last year. I think if I'm projecting him rest of season, I think that batting average slips down to maybe 270 instead of 290. It's still a good batting average. You'll still take it. I think that on base percentages slips from around 360 last year to more like 335, which again, still good. You'll still take it, but it's not as great. And I think he's on more like a 25 home run pace instead of a 30 home run pace. So none of that is obviously bad, right? Like, that is still, those are good numbers you will take from your third baseman. But I think it is time to reset expectations a little bit. Again, not based on like, oh, he's been terrible this year, so he's obviously bad now, but just like, it gives you it's a new data point to add to what's happened basically since 2020, since he's left Colorado, that gives me a sense that like, I think we need to be more realistic about what he's going to be going forward.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you drafted Arenado thinking you were going to get 2022 value, then I think you will. I'm with you. I think you're going to be disappointed, but I also agree. I think he's a pretty good buy low candidate. The talent is just like, either you think he's washed up or you don't. And if you don't, I kind of expect him to bounce back here.
Yeah, agreed. As for Machado, so I talked about those rolling charts. Machado's 15 game rolling WOBA is on the low side for him, but over the last few years, he has dipped. So his low point this year in terms of a 15-game rolling WOBA was 193. He hit that point on April 26th. He's actually been sort of straight up since then, so things have been improving. So that's like I said, 193. He had a low point of 176 at one point in 2021. He had a low point of 211 at another point in 2021. He had a 196 low point in 2019. There was another point in 2019 where he was down to 212. The point of this all is he's actually been worse than this at times in his career. And one of the things Scott and I talked about in Hacks and Jacks is like, and not that this is some, you know, big insight, lots of people talk about this, but like these sort of month-long slumps, these couple weeks of just somebody being terrible, like they happen. They happen throughout the season. And if Machado were putting up his normal Manny Machado season and then had what basically was his month of April in August, people would be like, man, Machado's had a rough August. And that would be the end of the conversation. Right now, because it's the start of the season, you see these numbers, and you're like, oh my God, he's been terrible. And then you look at his ex-woba and you're like, even his ex-woba is terrible. He's broken. He's never going to bounce back. And it's like, nah, he's sort of done this before. Like this isn't new for him. It's just a thing that's happening at a bad time. And, you know, I look at Machado and it's like his chase rate has climbed the last couple years, but last year it didn't really hurt him. And I don't think it's jumped a whole lot from where it is this year, from where it was last year. I do think his Z swing has gone down after going up last year. And so last year he got more aggressive and it really helped him. This year he's gotten more patient in the zone and more aggressive out of the zone. And he needs to tweak that. But again, I think that's a manageable tweak for a guy like him. And that's, again, that's sort of it. Like, I think if he does that, his walk rate comes back up because his walk rate being low is definitely hurting him right now. His max EV this year is 113.2. That's higher than his max EV last year. So while he's not tapping into that power as often this year as he has in the past, it's not like he's completely lost it, right? He is more than capable of getting up to some big numbers. And I just think this is, like, again, I think this is a buy low opportunity in a guy like Machado because he's done this before. He's going to, like, and that's not even like, oh, he's streaky. He goes through slumps, blah, blah, blah. Like, players have high points and low points. Every player has high points and low points. This is a fairly, it's on the extreme end of what a normal low point is for Manny Machado, if that makes sense, right? It's not something he does like five times a season, but it's something he does once every couple years at least.
Yeah, people were able to get some awesome discounts on him years ago. I can't remember which year. It was 4 or 5 years ago because it was like, oh man, Manny Machado, he doesn't try, and the exit velocity was down one season, and he just had a cut. But you're right. He's been in ruts like this before that were worse. I think the differences in chase rate, the difference in his zone swing rate, they're all pretty negligible that, you know, in a month's time, to your point, he could be right back on track. I kind of view him like a better version of Arenado, where I just think he's too good of a player. And in your keeper leagues, like, what are you really going to do if you have him right now? You're not going to sell him. Even if you're out of contention, why would you sell him right now? Because you should be pretty confident that a 30-year-old future Hall of Famer is going to bounce back and he'll have more value later in the season. I'm not cutting him in Otnew unless I have him for like $800,000. Like, there's nothing you can really do with Manny Machado right now. So it's just been a bummer of an April. The good news is, if you have had him to this point, you're only going to move up your standings because I think he's only going to get better.
Yeah, I agree. I do have him in our Keeper Cut Otnew Listener League, where you and I are just scraping the bottom, and I probably will put him on the trade block. But you're right that, like, the, you know, if I put him on the trade block, the message is I'm selling you Manny Machado, the all-star, the near MVP candidate. Like, that's the Manny Machado I'm selling.
Right.
If you're looking at him right now and you're not interested in buying that Manny Machado, like, don't bother making an offer. I'll wait until June if I need to, July, whatever. Like, I'm not in a hurry. 100%. But I'll put him out there because I do think, I think there's enough people out there who will believe in Machado and want to buy in that I think it's worth getting him on the market. But I think that's the real advice. It's not don't trade him. It's just like, don't trade him for pennies on the dollar because he's struggling right now. Like,
yeah,
wait it out if that's what you're going to do. So looking at some of the other names in this list, I think one other name that we can talk about very, very, very quickly, because I don't think there's a lot to say. Miles Straw had a really good start to the year and was hitting really well. But the reality is you bought Miles Straw for speed and not for anything else, if you bought him at all. And so he's stolen nine bases. He's going to keep running, and he's getting on base at a good enough clip, a 312 OBP, that he's going to get opportunities to run. So, like, yeah, his WOBA was low. Yeah, his XWOBA was low. I just don't care. It's not that I think that he's going to... With Straw, it's just like, I don't care that he's not hitting. Like, as long as he's getting on base at a decent clip, and he is, he's got a 312 OBP, so it's not terrible. But, like, you know, if he turns it around and hits for high average, like, great, you'll take that. There was a point at which he was leading the Guardians in RBI. That was never going to continue. He's not, like, just not what he's there for. He's stolen you nine bases so far. He's going to steal a ton of bases as long as he stays on the field. Now, the risk with him is he may not stay on the field. It's worth noting that George Valera has been playing a lot of center field in Columbus. And if they believe George Valera is the center fielder of the future, like, they're not moving Miles Straw to a corner, right? He becomes a pinch runner or slash defensive replacement, which might be how he's best used anyways. But other than him losing his job, the fact that he's not hitting, it just doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. I mean, there's been so far this season, 844 stolen bases. Last year at this time, on May 14th last season, there had been 492 stolen bases. That has neutralized players like Miles Straw. He is just not worth it.
Yeah. It is worth noting with those numbers that last season started, you know, a week or two late, right? So May 14th was earlier in the season. But even if you bump that up by an extra week or two and say, oh, there were closer to 600 steals this many games into the season, like, that's still a lot less than there are this year, right?
Right.
So other names on this list, there's a couple of young players that I think are interesting. A few young players, I'll say, actually. So you got Jose Miranda, Joey Weimer, Ezekiel Tovar, CJ Abrams. There's a couple other guys, like, you know, Nick Maton sort of fits in that category, but I'm less intrigued by him. But those other guys, like, Miranda was, you know, cold start last year that was great. Tovar and Abrams and Weimer are still sort of prospects, you know, learning on the job.
Well, Tovar's a little interesting. That's the one that kind of stood out to me here, because over the last couple of weeks, he's actually showed signs of life. I mean, his strikeout rate in April was over 30%, which is just not going to play when, you know, you have limited power, you're batting low in a bad lineup. But that strikeout rate is under 17% so far in May. It's not the end all be all, and we're only at May 14th, but it's also come with a little bit of hits, and this is a player who has a pretty good hit tool. You know, the WRC plus is still under 90 in May. So it's not like he has shown some extreme signs of life here. He's also not taken any walks. The average exit velocity is still around 86%. But, like, even the season on a whole, I don't think has been as bad as people thought. I think if you drafted Ezekiel Tovar late thinking, like, oh, I'm going to get my starting shortstop super late, then obviously it's hurt to this point. But his max EV is 109.4. It's not terrible. It's up from where it was last season, and only, you know, last season we're talking 24 batted balls, but the barrel rate at 6.5%, it's not great, it's not good, but it's not terrible. I don't think it's, I would expect, if I didn't look at this and you asked me what is Ezekiel Tovar's barrel rate this season, I was gonna guess, like, I don't know, 3.2%, like something awful. He hasn't quite been as bad, and with these May signs of life, I don't know, he's a guy I'm targeting. I have him for $3 in that Fangraph staff league, and I have no interest in cutting him. I'm going to ride out that $3. I don't need the money. That helps. But I'm holding out some hope here for Ezekiel Tovar in the leagues that I can.
Yeah, this is another thing I talked about on that Hacks and Jacks episode, was that Tovar is a guy who, when I drafted him, and I drafted him late where I drafted him, but when I drafted him, it was very much with a mindset of his glove's going to keep him on the field, and that's going to give him time to work through the stuff he needs to work through. And I've been getting anxious because he's not performing, but I think your point of, like, okay, well, the strikeout rate is headed the right direction, like, he's a kid, you know, even among kids, like, he's 21, he doesn't turn 22 until August. It's gonna take a little time, and he's also, I think it's worth remembering, he's not a bat first guy. Like, he's got a good hit tool, he doesn't have a ton of power, he doesn't have no power, he's not, like, you know, he's not Stephen Kwan, but he's not going to be a guy who you are counting on or should be counting on for 20 plus home runs. Like, he's going to hit for high average. He's going to get on base. Like, the upside here is he's going to hit for high average. He's going to get on base. He's going to steal you some bases, and he'll hit near the top of the order and score you some runs. And I think that's all still very much in play with him. But I absolutely believe he is a, like, he's a, just a guy you have to be patient with. And it may not be this year. Like, it may be that in, like, July, August, you start to really see some growth and improvement. And what you're really doing is banking on him for the future.
So many, many episodes ago, you and I did that draft to split up our one team. And we were going to take over two different teams in that Keeper Cut Listener League 1, which is a Roto 5x5, but it's OBP instead of batting average. And you took Tovar, and I was sad. I wanted that last round Ezekiel Tovar. That's good value. You're in first place. You're 1.5 points above me, so that could change in the blink of an eye. But you've got a situation where...
It's all because I took Tovar.
Well, probably not. But... You have Andrés Giménez, another struggling middle infielder who you have more invested in, but probably a steeper cost, although he might also be free. I don't even know. So, like, what are your thoughts on Tovar here? Is he your next guy to drop, or are you going to try and ride it out? Because in Otnu, I think it's obvious you hold 40 roster spots and he's probably cheap, but this league is not exactly like deep rosters.
I know. I've been struggling with what to do. I think what I really honestly should be doing is I should be putting Tovar on the trade block and finding somebody who is ready to focus on the future and has more capacity to wait it out. Because right now it's hard to sit there with a shallow roster and him taking up space when I know that he's basically just a stash at this point. And so I think that's probably the right move, but if there's no interest in him, at some point I'm just going to have to bail and let someone pick him up. And someone will, right? Someone will grab him, and that's fine. It's a case like part of what I'm thinking about is, like, sometimes in Otnu, I hate to drop a guy who's like a $10 guy because someone else might pick them up for $5 or $6. And it's like, oh, not only am I going to lose this, but the guy's going to get like a much better value on this guy and blah, blah. Like, Tovar is so inexpensive right now that whether I trade him to someone or whether I drop him, his price is effectively the same to whoever gets him next. And so there's a part of me that's like, maybe I should just, you know, if I can't get anything good in a trade, then maybe the best trade I can make is someone on the wire. And so we'll have to see. I think that's a,
With that, it being OBP, it's definitely not going to be his best format anyway. So,
no, that's true. Anyone else on this list that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I definitely wanted to talk about Tovar. One name that just missed it is a name that you are not a fan of. I know that, but I do think he's actually a pretty good buy low. He just missed the cut, and that's George Springer. So George Springer right now is sitting at a, what happened to George? There he is. So he's at a 267 WOBA. So he made the cut there. The ex WOBA suggests he has been better at 322, but still definitely not great. Not what you're expecting to see there. He just, for me, kind of fits the same mold as Arenado, and to a lesser extent, Manny Machado. What I mean by that is I expect Manny Machado to just be a flat-out stud. And if you're a little bit more hesitant on the older Springer and Arenado, I understand that. But Springer, already his max EV is 115.9. Like, there's still plenty of thunder in that bat. So I look at the average exit velocity of 86.8. This is like the average exit velocity episode for me. Not to keep belaboring the same point, but like, he's never been a crazy average EV guy anyway. I expect that to go up. The barrel rate is still 10.2%. That's up from last season. The plate discipline does not look much different. He's walking a little bit less, so I'm willing to bet he's chasing more. But it's George Springer. So if there's somebody in your league who's like, man, he's been terrible, he's 33, maybe this is kind of the downhill point for George Springer, you're probably going to have to deal with an IL stint at some point. But I still think that is one of the best outfield bats on a per plate appearance basis. So if I can actually get him cheap because his numbers look so gloomy, I'm going to go and try and acquire him.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I will tell you what I think of George Springer. All right. Welcome back. As you mentioned at the beginning of that, I'm not a huge fan of Springer, but it's worth noting, like, not being a fan of someone is always relative to their cost and what the market is saying and stuff like that. And so I was not paying market price for Springer. I was not drafting Springer at the price he was being drafted at. I never have, and I never will. And that's that. His price right now might be low enough that that is not where I'm standing, right?
Like, even Chad's in on Springer now.
Yeah. So, like, I was just noticing, like, he's been cut in at least some of my auto new leagues. And I'm trying to pull up some quick numbers here to see.
It's so one that auto new
His auto new roster rate is down to under 97%. That's not like a super low number, but it gives a sense of what's happened with him. And his average salary has been dipping slowly but surely over the last few weeks. As I look, he is a free agent right now in the Keeper Cut Listener League. He is up for bid right now in that league. He was cut at $31. The minimum bid on him is $16. We'll see what he goes for there, but I'm guessing it'll be less than 31.
I think you're right there.
Yeah. I've got $24 of cap space there, and I am looking at, like, I'm an 11th place team. I don't really have a lot to lose here. What's the right bid on him? Even if the only point in bidding on him is to wait for his value to go back up and trade him because he's not my favorite player to sit on, right? Like, if I bid on him, it probably won't be to keep him long term. It'll be to, you know, flip him for something that I do want to keep long term. But I'm trying to look at what else his costs are. That podcaster league, I don't think he was cut in that podcaster league, was he? Because he's $25. I think that was just what he went for at auction. Yeah, it's just what he went for at auction. Maybe that's the only one of my leagues he's been cut in, because his prices elsewhere are not really low. Yeah. So maybe everyone else is just sort of sticking it out right now. But my sense is he has been cut in other places. If it's not my league, then I know that I've seen it. Maybe showed up on one of the reports I pulled on players who we cut recently. But I know he's being cut in auto-new leagues, at least at some rate, and that's resulting in his price coming down, which makes sense. And if you look at some trades in auto-new recently, like, he was traded in a Fangraphs points league a few days ago, a $36 Springer for a $5 Justin Steele. See, back on May 1st, a $38 Springer, a $7 Cronenworth, and a $5 Bryce Elder for $2 Michael Brantley and $38 Corey Seager. That's actually a pretty high value, I think, on Springer there to get a Seager for him. But at that point, it was a little bit earlier, and Seager was, you know, Seager's hurt.
I'm just wondering how Bryce Elder got up to $5.
Yeah, well, here's one, a Springer for Machado deal. But this is a $25 Springer for a $38 Machado, and Springer went with Brendan Donovan at $11 and Curtis Mead at $6. Josh Winkowski went back the other way, but I'm not sure I care about Josh Winkowski. Sorry. Hope you don't mind me saying that.
I don't mind that at all.
But I think, like, anyways, these trades, it's sort of interesting. Like, I think preseason, it would have been very surprising to see somebody give up a $25 Springer for a $38 Machado. Now, to get that Machado, and Machado has him good himself, right? But now to get that Machado, you need to add a couple of exciting young middle infielders in Donovan and Mead. So I do have I don't know. So here's one more. This is a $32 Springer and a $10 Dalton Varsho, and a $3 Kyle Harrison, who I really like, for a $31 Chris Bryant, a $1 Jack Sawinski, and a $1 Aroldis Chapman. Now, maybe some of that has to do with Sawinski's value going up, but if you focus on that being, as you know, Springer for Bryant as the core big outfield pieces in that, and then a reliever and Sawinski added on to Bryant, and you had to add on Varsho and Harrison to Springer, like, his value is down. Like, that's a pretty, like, again, preseason, if I were talking about a $32 Springer for a $31 Bryant, there's like two, three pieces being added onto Bryant to even that out. Like, he wasn't
for sure
to Springer. So his value's down, and it may be down enough that I'm back in, right? Yeah. It's all about price. So one other guy on that list I want to talk about quickly, Andrés Giménez. You mentioned him before. I've got him on a bunch of teams, as well as obviously being a Guardians fan. And the thing is, so again, looking at his rolling WOBA chart, 15-game weighted average of WOBA, his dip this year is lower by a fairly decent amount than what he did last year. It is not lower than what he did in 2021. Now, 2021 was bad for him. But if you look at his career as a whole, he's played roughly 300 games. He might have even played exactly 300 games at this point. Let's double check that. He has played 300 games exactly. 300 games, 1,047 plate appearances. And this dip for him is sort of a thing, again, that happens in a 300-game sample for him. He's been this low. He was this low at basically four different times between 2020 and 2021. Last year, he just never quite dipped this low. And so, again, what that tells me is if you look at his career sample, where he's a 331 WOBA, where he's got a 267 career average, 338 on base, 420 slugging. He's, you know, a 15-ish home run kind of guy over his career. He's a 25-ish stolen base guy over his career. What he's done over this last few weeks is just sort of a thing that happens over that career. And so Giménez as well, I think I'm looking at as sort of a, like, you know, it's tempting to look at what he did last year, and I probably did this and say, like, he's established himself at a new level. He was still only 23. This was his breakout year. That's probably not true. But I think what we are seeing is, like, okay, what he's done is he's dipped back to sort of the mix he's had for his career. And as he gets, that'll bounce back to where his career numbers are. And so I'd still buy in on like a 330-ish WOBA the rest of the way.
Yeah, I'm not ready to give up on Andrés Giménez. I think it's probably a pretty good comp, the two players that you're dealing with in Listener League One, right? Ezequiel Tovar and Andrés Giménez, where Giménez obviously has more of a track record because Tovar does not have one at all, but it's not like Giménez has a very long track record, and I think Tovar was the higher rated prospect, so I think there's a little bit of a comparison to be made there. I'm still holding out on Giménez over Tovar, and I think obviously most of our audiences as well, because Giménez was in many cases a top 100 pick. Especially in your stolen base leagues, you know, I brought up earlier that stolen bases are up around the league, but Giménez is a player who could still be a standout in that category, even with stolen bases being up, while not killing you in everything else. So right. Last year, we said it weeks ago, months ago, that like last year might end up being a career season for Andrés Giménez, but that doesn't mean that the rest of his career will be a disappointment. So yeah. It's finding that right balance and understanding the value that you have there.
Yes, agreed. Totally agree. Any other hitters you want to talk about?
I think I'm ready to get into some pitchers here.
All right, let's switch to the pitchers then. And as with hitters, I started off by filtering a list. And this time, instead of using a 300 WOBA, I used a 5.00 ERA and FIP. So here,
and to be clear for our listeners, that's not good.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good. There are 8 starting pitchers who are sort of, you know, qualified for the ERA title, right? Have been pitched pretty regularly. It basically means they need to have, I think, like 7-8 starts. All of these guys have made 8 starts. 8 starting pitchers, 8 starts apiece, all have both an ERA and an FIP over 5. Here's your list of names sorted from the worst ERA to the best ERA. Lance Lynn, Ken Waldichuk, Austin Gomber, Jordan Lyles, Ryan Nelson, Taijuan Walker, Michael Kopech, Hayden Wesneski. So to start with here, I think there's a couple of names, and I'm going to, because we can try to go through all 8 of these, at least at some level, but I'm going to start with 2 of them who I think we can just sort of ignore. And those are Austin Gomber and Jordan Lyles. I mean, it seems to me that like, they're just not very good pitchers, and there's not a lot else to say.
Agreed.
Okay. Then let's talk about three rookies that are on here. I think they're all right. Yeah, these guys are all rookies. Ken Waldichuk, Ryan Nelson, Hayden Wesneski. If they're not rookies, they're close enough to rookies. They should be. These guys all came in with varying degrees of hype. You know, Nelson had those like incredible starts down the stretch last year. Waldichuk had really, really good minor league numbers, was pretty highly touted. Same with Wesneski. And they've been collectively bad. Very bad. So any thoughts on those three guys or on any one of those three guys where you're like, yeah, this is a guy that, yeah, he's been terrible, but.
I guess I'm kind of holding out some hope for Wesneski. I think out of these three names, I liked him by far the most going into the season. So I guess I'm going to give him a little bit more runway there. He's also probably had more like respectable outings so far this season than those other two players in Ryan Nelson and Ken Waldichuk. Waldichuk is just, he's just given up so many home runs. He's not getting any strikeouts. I mean, he has been really bad. And if you're in a standard 5x5, there's almost no win. Literally, there's no win upside there because Oakland Athletics starters do not win games. So I can't say it's him. And then looking at Ryan Nelson, like, yeah, Fott has been absolutely awful. Dre Jameson was so bad he had to get sent down. Madison Bumgarner got DFA'd. So you think the job security is there, but at some point, they're going to start getting some of those guys back. I know at least Zach Davies is out. I don't know how soon he is to coming back. And I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden Ryan Nelson, if he is not only pitching poorly, but he's not even going deep into outings, if he ends up getting bumped from that rotation. I think at least at some point to limit his innings, he's going to get bumped. Whereas I guess I'm maybe not that worried about that with Waldichuk and Wesneski. So I think Wesneski has been the best so far of these three. And I think he has the most stability to stay in that rotation, even though that's a team that's trying to contend. So I guess I'm most in on him. But to be frank, Chad, I'm like kind of done with all three of these people. So if you have any of these guys in your Ought New Leagues and your keeper leagues, I understand trying to hold on to all three because you probably have them for really cheap prices and so on and so forth. But if you're in redraft or even in a shallow keeper, like, or you're in an Ought New League where you have any of these guys for $5 or more, like I'm totally fine with cutting any of them.
Yeah, I'm with you that I'm fine with cutting any of them. I also agree Wesneski is the one Nelson I'm done with. I'm just out. I just, like, his minor league numbers weren't that good. I wasn't that excited about him last year. I bought in a very limited amount on what he did late last year in MLB. I was like, okay, maybe there's something here. But it was always I always had a toe in the water and very little more. Whereas Wesneski and Waldichuk, I was in on these guys. So Wesneski, what I'll point out is he had, some bad starts to open the year. Then he went through a 5-start stretch. It ended yesterday when he got lit up for 4 home runs by the Twins. But prior to that start, his 5 starts previous, and this, yes, he faced Miami, Washington and Oakland in that stretch. He also faced the Dodgers and the Padres. So this isn't like, it's actually a fairly reasonable sample of extremes, I guess you'd say. Like, he faced 2 of the best offenses in baseball and 3 of the worst. But over that stretch, he had a 2.22 ERA, a 3.54 FIP. He walked 0.64 per 9 innings. He was walking nobody over that stretch. He also managed to mostly avoid home runs. He gave up 3 home runs over that stretch. 1 to the Dodgers, 1 to the Padres. He also gave up 1 to the Marlins. He wasn't striking out a ton of guys. His K per 9 was just 6.04. But, like, he was demonstrating what he is capable of over that stretch. And I think, I wish I could remember who it was. Someone in the Auto News Slack yesterday made the point that, like, Wesneski is basically learning on the job here, right? He's thrown 120 innings at AAA. He threw 83 at AA. So, like, he's only got a couple hundred innings of a, high minors ball under his belt. And so he's still sort of figuring things out. And the Cubs appear committed to letting him figure things out. I think that's a pretty good thing for him and for the Cubs. But it does short-term mean there's going to be some ups and downs for him. And I think, you're going to have to make some decisions about what you want to do with him in fantasy. Because I'll be honest, like, I started Wisniewski a bunch of places yesterday, and it sucked. Like, he went five innings, he gave up four home runs. He struck out five and only walked one. That part was good. Honestly, it was just the four home runs, right? Like, seven hits and a walk over five innings isn't great, but it's not the end of the world if they're not all home runs. If they're all home runs, bad things happen. So, you know, I'm intrigued by Wisniewski. I think I'd still buy in. I don't think I'm like, you know, if I'm selling, he's not like the focal point in a Manny Machado trade for me to go back to talk about, you know, possibly selling Machado. But is he a piece I wouldn't mind getting in a trade like that? I think I'd be okay with him as a part of that trade and wanting him to be someone I can like hopefully build up to being an important part of my rotation by late this year into next year. If I have him, especially if I'm competing, I'm probably just going to sit on him and not renew. But in some other formats, you sort of have to move on at some point. And I have a dynasty league with some of the pitcherless community that I had both Wisniewski and Waldichuk when the season started. I've already cut Waldichuk. He's done nothing for me. He has shown me no signs of life. And that league is a weird league because it's I think it's 43-man rosters, but you have 15 minor league spots that have to be used for minor leaguers. And so once guys, the minor leaguers in that definition are either in the minors right this second. So like, as an example, Jake Lamb got optioned by LA, by the Angels. And I don't have Jake Lamb in that league. I don't know why you'd have Jake Lamb in any league. But the point is that it doesn't matter that he's not a prospect or you know, what we think of as a minor leaguer. He's in the minor leagues. I can therefore hold him in a minor league spot. Or it can be a guy who is rookie eligible. So a guy who came up to start the season like Esteori Ruiz, like Waldichuk and Wisniewski, but were still rookie eligible, you could keep them stashed in a minor league spot until they use up that rookie eligibility. In that league, because we have relatively shallow major league rosters, we basically have a 27, 28 man major league roster. I had Ruiz, I had Waldichuk, I had Wisniewski, I had Trevor Larnach, Oscar Colas. I got all these guys that have been graduating. And every time they graduate, I need to promote them and cut someone or cut them. And eventually Waldichuk became just expendable. I couldn't keep sitting on him in a major league spot. If he got sent down, I would have stashed him in the minors. I would have been thrilled to do that. But I just couldn't. Wisniewski, I still have. He's the one of these guys that I'm just... He is showing signs of life. He has a more impressive track record, especially since coming to the Cubs. I am willing to wait him out at least a little bit longer, but I need to see more of that five game stretch in between Seattle and Minnesota and less of what he did like at Minnesota yesterday.
Yes, the better pitching definitely would be good. I'm with you on Waldichuk. I mean, look, maybe one day he figures it out. Obviously, we're rooting for the guy, but I mean, he's almost a 60% fastball pitcher anyway. He's essentially a two-pitch pitcher who's shown nothing. There's not a whole lot of that you're going to get out of holding on to him. In regards to Wisniewski, I mean, I guess this is a tangible, albeit anecdotal example right now. I've got five claims in that will process tomorrow in our listener league one that we were talking about earlier. And basically I'm deciding between dropping Wisniewski or Tanner Houck, and I'm going with Tanner Houck. So I'm going to hold on to Wisniewski at least for another week. And we'll see how that goes. Assuming these moves process anyway, who knows if any of them do. But if you're making some decisions there between Wisniewski and pitcher blank, I'm moving on from Tanner Houck in this league. I'm sure you've got similar pitchers who are like borderline guys for you. And I'd give Wisniewski a little bit more rope. I think he's shown enough as a major leaguer to maybe be worth buying in on.
Got it. So after those three kids, we've got three varying degrees of veteran, we'll say. We've got three guys left. They are Lance Lynn, who is, you know, by any definition of veteran, he is a veteran. He is 36. He's been an all-star. He is a, you know, long track record.
Many teams, all that.
Yeah. Taijuan Walker, definitely a veteran, but less established, I would say, than Lynn. He's been sort of up and down through his career, had a great year last year. And then Michael Kopech, who is, he's 27. He is a veteran at this point. He has been around a while, but certainly has never been, he's been more highly touted maybe than the others, but has never been as good as the others. So of those three, any of those you want to react or respond to?
No, Lance Lynn, I'm holding out hope. I mean, you put him in the notes, so I know you've got a lot to say about Lance Lynn, but it's weird that walks have become an issue for him. That's not something I would have expected with Lance Lynn. I know he was a guy that towards the end of draft season, he was like moving up board, so people got a lot invested in him. I don't know if the maybe Team USA threw him off, you know, the World Baseball Classic, whatever it was, but he's a guy who's got a pretty consistent, it's going to be a lot of fastballs, maybe some hard contact. He's not going to walk a lot. He's going to give you quality starts and wins, and he just hasn't been that. I don't know if it's something in the water in Chicago. I think he's an obvious trade candidate, so you could see, you know, him at the trade deadline get moved to some other team and all of a sudden just take off. He's a guy I guess I'm still interested in. Those other two, no, I can't say I am.
Yeah, Lynn, I mean, I agree. I will start by saying on Lynn, like, in some of my auto new leagues, and I've got him in a bunch because I bought in. So Lynn last year, let me go back a little bit here. Lynn last year, coming back from injury, started terribly. And his numbers looked awful. And then he started to turn things around, and people took a long time to notice. And I started buying back in and was really impressed. And Lynn's a guy who I've always been a little bit down on. Maybe sort of Springer-like, where like, yeah, I agree he's a good pitcher, but I've just never been a huge fan. But when the price has dipped, it's like, yeah, I'll buy in when the price is low. And that's sort of what happened last year. And I bought in, and I was very happy. And I kept buying in through this offseason because the price stayed low. I am right now very strongly considering, I may have even done it already, I should double check, but there are some Lance Lynns I'm going to cut. And I'm starting by saying that because I agree with you. I'm not done with Lance Lynn. I just can't keep waiting at the price he's been at. So like he was cut in one of my leagues, my food and travel league. He was $14. I wasn't the one who cut him there. Someone else did. In our listener league, he was cut at $18. I have him in two leagues. I have a $14 version and I have an $8 version. The $8 version, by the way, is in that Podcasters League. I'm probably going to sit on that $8 version. It's a good enough price that if he turns things around, he potentially goes back to being a keeper. And that team's been successful enough that I can afford to wait him out. In League 32, where I have him at $14, I may cut him because I need the cap space, and I'm okay with that. So I wanted to start with that because I'm going to talk about why I think I'm buying back in without being like, you know, I'm lying to you or something, right? Like, I hate it when I'm like, people are like, oh, I would definitely buy this guy, and then they like cut him a day later, and it's like, eh. So I wanted to explain some context there that, like, I would buy in if the price is right, but where I need cap space and he's expensive, I can also understand cutting him and maybe trying to buy back in later. Like, he may sit out there for 30 days at $7-$8. So issues for him, as you said, walks, home runs have also been an issue. That is bad. Although I think some of that's unlikely to continue. His home run per fly ball rate is 22.2%. I'm willing to bet that 22.2% does not stay that high. It probably cuts down maybe by as much as half. He also had a similar issue last year. Like I said, he started slow, finished really strong. That doesn't guarantee anything. It's not like, oh, this guy once started slow and then got really good, so that's always going to happen to him. But it is a reminder, like we talked about those rolling charts, it's a reminder that guys go through fluctuations and some guys bounce back better than others. And this is a thing we have seen Lance Lynn do before and return to being great. So I'm watching those walk rates and home run rates. I want to see those moving down. Where I say I'm ready to, I'd be willing to buy back in. Like, if I start to see the right trends on those walk rates and home run rates, then I'm going to buy back in pretty quickly. Because when he turned it around last year, it happened fast. And then, like you said, win leagues, quality start leagues, whatever it is, like, he throws a lot of innings. He throws them very well. He gives you good rates. Like, he just does a little bit of everything for you. And I want to be in on that when the time is right.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm actually I'm more concerned about the walks than I am the home runs. I think his profile kind of just generates it, or looks like a guy who will probably give up home runs when he gives up contact. The walks are weird, but with the home runs, like, all right, so this year he's thrown his fastball 349 times. He's given up 6 home runs on it. I mean, you brought up the home run to fly ball rate, how it's out of whack. In 2021, he threw that fastball 1,051 times. So more than 3 times as much as he's thrown it now, or about 3 times as much as he's thrown it now. And he gave up the same amount of home runs. I think he's just having some bad luck there. Nothing looks different. The usage doesn't look different. The whiffs are down a little bit, but they're not different enough. It's negligible. Down to like the exit velocity and the launch angle, it looks pretty similar to where they've been the last 2 years, and that's obviously his bread and butter pitch. So I think he's just had a little bit of bad luck on it. If I see the walks go down, even if the home runs are still up, I'm actually even more likely to buy in, because I think he'll still be cheap, but I'll be more convinced that he's fixed. So I'm with you on Lynn.
He also is like, his zone percentage is up. Where those walks are coming from is his chase rate is down, but it's like, everything looks a lot more like his like 2020, 2021 season than his 2022, basically. But like 2020, 2021, he had a 2.91 ERA, 3.62 FIP, 4.00 XFIP, 3.85 Sierra. Like, it was good. It's not great. I mean, the ERA is great, but I'm not counting on him repeating beating his out, you know, his peripherals by that much. But like, those are good numbers. And there isn't anything going on here that like I look at and I'm like, yeah, he's a fundamentally different pitcher than he was 2 years ago. The biggest question might be like, his fastball velocity is down. It was 94 in 2020 and 2021. It was down to 93 last year. It's down to 22.2. So I do think there is a possibility that what we're seeing here is just its decline, and that, you know, extra half mile per hour, extra mile per hour on the fastball is the difference. I'm just not quite ready to give up on that yet. I don't know. We'll see.
But I'd be curious to see where the velocity was at this time last year, right? I mean, April is usually a season where velocities are down, or usually a month where they're down.
He missed April last year. Oh, that's fun. So I told you he has 8 starts. I told you that his fastball velocity so far through those 8 starts this year is 92.2. Through his first 8 starts last year, his fastball velocity was 92.2. Exactly the same. So from that point on,
big boy's just getting warmed up.
Yeah, it was 92.9 the rest of the way. So like that could be the difference, right? That
almost a mile an hour. Yeah.
Yeah. So point is, yes, I am waiting on him. The other guys here, I feel a little bad because I feel like Michael Kopech, like, I want to see him succeed.
Just won't be on your fantasy teams.
Yeah. And like somebody yesterday was like, oh, he struck out 5 in like a 2-inning period yesterday, and he only gave up 1 hit over 4 2/3. He only gave up 2 runs. He walked 6 in that game. That wasn't yesterday, but it was Friday, but close enough. But the point is that like he can't put up consistently good performances. Like, you expect to see big strikeouts from him. They're not there. He's striking out less than a hitter per inning. He occasionally keeps the walks down, but his walk rate is 5.95 per 9 innings. Like, it's just not going to work. And on top of that, he's got a 20.7% home run to fly ball rate, which you could argue that's going to come down, because it probably will. That is very inflated. But he's getting hit hard. Like, his exit velocity is up. His barrel rate is up. Like, his barrel rate so far this year is 18.5%. Now, that probably will also come down. Guys just won't consistently barrel him at that rate. But, like, he's not just giving up a bunch of home runs because they happen to be getting over the fence. Like, he's getting tagged, and he plays in a bad power park for pitchers. So, I wish Michael Kopech all the best, except against the Guardians. And he won't be on my fantasy teams. And like, if you're still buying in on Michael Kopech, like, I don't know what to tell you. When he was 22 and like a breakout candidate, and then he didn't pitch in the majors in 2019 or 2020. And if you come back in 2021 and you're like, I believe in this guy's talent, I get it. And then he was good, but made 4 starts and was a reliever the rest of the year. And like, it's just been bad since then. And I'm just not. Yeah.
People hold on to prospect value for a really long time. And I can be guilty of that, right? It could be like a freaking 29-year-old. And I'll be like, well, hey, man, remember, they were a top prospect. Keep in mind why everybody loved Michael Kopech, why the Red Sox were able to get Chris Sale for Michael Kopech and Yoma Okada. It's because the dude regularly threw like 101 miles an hour.
Right.
He doesn't do that anymore. So he's not the same pitcher that we were excited about. He's a mystery box, and it's so far not good.
Yeah, I will say, like, I said it's all been bad since then. I should note, in 2022, he had a 3.54 ERA over 25 starts and almost 119.1 innings, almost 120 innings. The problem was that 3.54 ERA, like, he had a 4.50 FIP, 4.83 XFIP, 4.73 Sierra. Like, it was fool's gold, and it was very obviously fool's gold. And so what you're looking at is a guy who really has never been fantasy successful as a starter in his career. And like I said, he doesn't have the upside he once had. So yeah, I'm out on him. Let's take one more quick break. When we come back from that, the last name on this list is Taiwan Walker, and we should talk a bit about him as well. All right, welcome back. We've been going through our eight pitchers with both an ERA and an FIP above five. We have so far basically said we're still interested in Lance Lynn. We're still interested in Hayden Wesneski. Everyone else, you've been sort of like, eh, you can move on. Taiwan Walker, the last name on this list. And which list are you putting him on? Is he with Lynn and Wesneski, or is he just done for you?
He's just not a player I had interest in. I think it was pretty clear last year there was a little bit of luck involved, right? ERA around 3.5, but most of the ERA estimators had him at 4 or above. He's an innings eater in deep leagues. He's streamable, but I think he's showing us this year that he's just not really a player worth investing in. There's not going to be a lot of strikeouts. The home runs this year are a bigger problem than they've ever been, which makes sense because he's been really bad. But like, I don't know, even the fastball velocity is down a click and he's now 30 years old. So like, do we really expect it to get much better? I don't.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is, and I like, this is not, it's never going to happen because the Phillies just signed him to a pretty sizable contract, but like, he should not be in the Phillies rotation. Matt Strom is a better starting pitcher than him right now. And if you look at the rest of that rotation, like, Walker's the worst of them. Maybe you say Bailey Falter, but like, Falter is young and still sort of developing. And I'm actually more intrigued to see him get starts. One of the two of them, it could be either one of them. Let's say that. One of the two of them should be making room for Strom to get back into the rotation. But like, the fact that Walker's even in that conversation, and I think it's, I don't know, that was a contract that like they paid him 4 years, $18 million. It is a, like, that is the going rate for a guy who eats a bunch of innings. But the thing is, you're basically looking at that point, like, $18 million, that guy should be a two win pitcher from not wins, but two war pitcher. His F war last year was 2.5. Before that, it was 1.4. He was not on a two-win pace in 2020. He barely pitched in 2019. He threw one inning. He threw 13 innings in 2018. In 2017, he was a 2.5 win pitcher. In 2016, 0.7 wins. Like, there's no track record here to suggest that he is going to, from his age 30 to 33 season, which is what they paid for, that he's going to be a two-win pitcher. I think this is just like, this isn't quite who he is. Like, he's not a 5.75 ERA, but he is absolutely like a 4.5 ERA, something like that. And I'm just not interested in a guy who's going to give me a, 4.25 ERA and less than a strikeout per inning. If you were giving me, 11 strikeouts per nine innings and throwing an ERA of around 4, like, yeah, I'll take that ERA hit to get those strikes. Like, he's just not even doing that. So
yeah,
I'm with you. I think he is an innings eater. He's maybe a guy you could stream. Although again, like, without a lot of strikeouts, it's just the upside on a stream is low and the risk on a stream is bad, because if he gets beat up, he doesn't even get you the strikeouts to make up for getting beat up. So I get him as a streamer, but that's it.
Yeah, and you'd have to be, like you were saying, you'd have to be really limited in options. And I think it's more likely that if he continues to pitch this poorly, he's a Phantom Eielson. He's not a go-to-the-bullpen guy. He throws a lot of different pitches. He's low 90s. Like, he's very close to being completely irrelevant for a guy who just signed a pretty nice contract.
Yeah. Good for him, though.
Yeah, hey, more power to him.
Yeah. Any other pitchers you want to discuss?
I have none, but I would like to end on a positive note. Since we just ended on Taiwan Walker, a player who the show is a fan of, Royce Lewis last night. Did you see what he did, Chet?
No.
Second rehab game, 2-for-3, 3 runs scored, doubled, and stole his second base in as many games. So Royce Lewis is on his way back. And Kirilloff, 2 home runs the other day. So our young twins here are showing out.
Yeah. I had Kirilloff in multiple lineups yesterday, so I felt really good about that. That was... Although nice. I did bench Christian Yelich in one league where I could have used
him. Did he go off? I didn't even see.
He hit 2 home runs as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He's yeah. Maybe he's getting that launch angle back up. Probably not. Yeah, but maybe.
Right.
I was very sad to see that I had him. I was like, oh, yes, finally. Because I've got him in a bunch of leagues. And I was like, oh, I benched him everywhere. That sucks. But he's just been bad. So it's funny because he's been stealing bases. And so he's been useful for me in my rare leagues where stolen bases matter. But other than that, Yelich has been worse than I thought he would be. The thing with him has always been like the on base percentage provides such good floor. And he hasn't even really, he's a 320 on base or something like that. It's been ugly. So,
yeah. We tried but to end positive, folks.
No, I'm still very excited about Kirilloff. I am excited about Lewis coming back.
Yeah.
I'm also another guy, a bat who just missed our list as well, because his WOBA, I think, is like 303, although his ex-WOBA is below 300, is Jazz Chisholm Jr. And Jazz is another guy like, I'm still in on him. His chase rate's down. His exit velocity is up. His max EV is up. He's got a launch angle issue, but he's had that before and has fixed it before. And his contact rate is down on pitches outside the zone, which is driving down his overall contact rate, which is causing a swing strike rate to be like, he just needs to he needs to fix his contact on pitches outside the zone, which is such a random thing to have to fix. But like, other than that, I think he's in a pretty good spot. And I was planning on talking about him a little bit more, but then he like busted his ankle last night and x-rays were negative. And so I think he's okay, but he's probably gonna be out for a bit. But like, I don't know. I was this close to trading for Jazz in my CBS head to head league. It's a team in last place that has a $24 Jazz, which I think could prove to be a good keeper price, although it's not a guarantee. It's, you know, a relatively shallow league. So being second base and outfield is super useful for me. And he wanted, this is the league where I promoted Yoshida. We talked about Yoshida and Beatty, and I decided to promote Yoshida and hold Beatty as a trade chip. He wanted Beatty, my $10 Edwin Diaz stash, and my, I think it's a $6 or $8 Logan Allen for Jazz. And he's got a couple of closers. He's got a $5 Iglesias. He's got a $1 Carlos Estevez. Like, he was looking at, you know, one of those closers with Jazz. I was like, okay, I'm sort of into this. And then in the, like, I think it was like 24 to 36 hours after I was like, I'm going to just double check some stuff. Mason Miller hit the IL. Tanner Bibee had a bad start. Max Fried hit the IL. And so I went from having, in a league where I like to carry 7 starters, I had 8 I was pretty happy with. And I'm still happy with Bibee. Well, I'm not super worried about the one bad start, but like, I went from having 8 guys who look great to having 6 guys who look like they're good, and Bibee maybe being a little bit of a question mark. And I was like, oh, now maybe I can't really give up Allen. And then I was looking at the free agent market, and the free agent I picked up was Wisniewski, because he had been so good over those 5 starts I talked about. But I'm still trying to figure out. Yeah. So I'm still trying to figure out if I can, you know, can I piece together the pitching I want to piece together to allow me to trade Allen? Because the reality is, like, giving up Diaz, I'm fine with, especially since I'm going to get a closer back. Giving up Beatty, like, if I'm not going to promote him, I might as well trade him. But giving up a pitcher, I don't know. I probably should still do it. The reality is, Jazz and a closer in a league where, like, my relievers in that league, I think, are they're not bad. They're just not closers, and it's not a saves plus holds leagues. It's just a saves league. It's head to head. And so I've been like, I'm typically pretty content to punt saves until late in the season there and then make some trades to be ready for the playoffs. I've got AJ Puck, who's been good, although he struggled a bit lately, but he's been good and he's getting some saves. The Marlins just don't get a lot of opportunities. I've got Hunter Harvey, who he should be the closer in DC. I don't know if he's going to be. And then I've got Brian Abreu, who, like, every time Ryan Pressly has a weak outing, I'm like, maybe it's time.
That guy's so nasty, too.
Abreu is so good.
It's going to happen.
So that's actually the other thing that's been a challenge for me with this trade is, like, let's say I get either Iglesias or Estevez. They're obvious closers. They have to be plugged into my lineup right away. But, like, I don't really want to give up Puck, Harvey, or Abreu. Puck is $7, which isn't, like, a great price, but he's a closer, so he's not the one I would give up. And the other two are $1 each. And I do think there's a real chance that those guys are closers by the end of the year. So
Harvey should have been going into the season.
I know.
Yeah. It's really bizarre there. He's the one to cut, though, out of those options if you end up doing it. Because even if he gets it, I mean, it's the freaking Nationals. Like, what are you going to get? Six saves?
Fair enough. Yes, that's true. And whereas Abreu, like, if Abreu ends up at the job, he immediately becomes an elite closer. Like,
you could get 20 saves in half a season. So,
yeah. So yeah, I guess the question is, do I make that deal? And I don't know. I have to look at, like, because my rotation, right? Oh, I forgot. It wasn't in the 24 hours after I started talking about that deal, but Anthony DeSclafani is on that team for me as well.
Another one.
He got hurt. So, like, you know, when I started this conversation, I had, like, Wheeler and Fried and DeSclafani and Kirby, and I had Bibee and Allen. Like, I also have Blake Snell, who I think is starting to – his last two starts have been decent, and they've both been against the Dodgers. So it's like, okay.
I almost brought him up for this exercise because as bad as he's been, you know he's going to have a month where his FIP is, like, 1.4, and we're going to all want Blake Snell again.
It's coming. But I had all these guys, and now all of a sudden my rotation, my healthy rotation at league – is Allen, Bibee, Snell, Wesneski, and then I have Kirby and Wheeler. So Kirby and Wheeler are great, but, like, everything else here is like, I don't know. So I'm torn. And then, like, I was looking at free agents. So, like, okay, if I make this trade, then I'm going to have to pick up some pitching. And if I look at, like, you know, by CBS's rankings of their stats this year, the best starters available as free agents are Matt Strom, who we just talked about and isn't even a starter anymore. Dane Dunning, who is at best sometimes a starter.
He's Dane
Jeffrey
Dunning,
Springs. Jeffrey Springs is still statistically the third best free agent starter available. So that's not really that helpful. Nick Martinez, Seth Lugo, Josh Winkowski, not a starter. Bryce Wilson, not a starter. Cutter Crawford, injured and not a starter. JP France, who has been good, so maybe I should believe in him, but I don't. Michael Wacha, Rich Hill. Tanner Houck. Like, I'm scrolling down here and it's like Taiwan Walker's there. I can go pick up Taiwan Walker, who we just talked about. So I'm just sort of, I don't know. Like, I actually, the next guy that we have Fab running tonight, and I've got to put Mason Miller on the IL. I think the guy I'm going to be targeting there is Brian Baio.
Yeah.
And he's got a 5 ERA. I don't know what his FIP was. He didn't make our list, so it wasn't high enough. But his last, was it?
He also might
starts?
Just not qualify.
Yeah. But his last three starts. So here's another positive note. We can actually end on this one. But Brian Baio, 16 innings, 16 strikeouts, 4 walks, 5 earned runs over his last three starts. And yes, the first of those was against the fearsome Cleveland Guardians, but his last two were against the Jays and the Braves. And he shut those two teams down, right? Against those two teams, Atlanta, Toronto, two terrific offenses, 11 innings, 10 strikeouts, 2 walks, 12 hits, 4 earned runs. That is fantastic numbers. He got a quality start in one of those. So I am excited about adding Brian Baio. I don't know other than that. Then I'm looking at, like, I think Kyle Bradish is a good buy low, so he might be next in the list. But, like, I don't know. Louis Varland? Should I buy in on Louis Varland? Maybe I should buy in on Louis Varland.
Kind of like him. In regards to Baio, I mean, he was particularly impressive in that Atlanta outing. 18 swing strikes in under 100 pitches. And if you look at the Red Sox schedule coming up, he gets the Mariners, who I like the Mariners. I think they're good, but that is a team that's they've been struggling. And if he's at his if he's really getting into it here, he should be pretty good. You mentioned the last three outings. His only other two outings were his first two outings of the year coming off injury, and one of them was in bad weather. So Bayo's giving us something to be excited about over here.
Yeah. So I think that is enough. We've covered a bunch of guys who have been terrible this year. Some of them are still worth buying in on, and hopefully those guys will turn around. We'll have to check back in later in the year and see if we picked the right buy lows. But thank you all for listening. We'll be back with you for episode 100 next week.